Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Never go to the second location. Always trust your gut.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. On Residue, we tell you the true stories behind some of your favorite movies. Today, we will be talking about the movie Bully. Now, this is the true story of the murder of Bobby Kent. Before we get started, don't forget to follow Residue on Instagram at Residue Podcast, TikTok, and Facebook at Residue, a true crime podcast. And don't forget to hit that follow button. Because it's gonna be a heartache tonight, a heartache tonight, I know, if you don't follow me. So as most of you know, Residue is created, hosted, written, produced, researched, and edited by me. So if you really enjoy the show, the best thing that you could possibly do to help me out is leave a 5-star review. And thank you so much for the reviews you guys are leaving and for the DMs that I am getting. The Residue, the Residudes rule. This is the true story behind the movie Bully. As always, listener discretion is advised. The 2001 film Bully, directed by Larry Clark, is known for being one of the most disturbing but realistic portrayals of teenage violence ever put on film. This movie is not a glossy film. It's not stylized. It looks like a story, a crime that could happen in any suburban neighborhood. And it hits so hard. I saw this movie back in 2001, but I rewatched a couple of weeks ago just to prepare for this episode. And I haven't been able to stop thinking about the movie. The movie is just so raw. It's so real. It is really close to the book Bully, A True Story of High School Revenge by Jim Schutz. I mean, down to the posters that one of the actresses has on her walls in the movie. It's a brilliant film. It's a really great book. And the film and the book are two of my main sources for today's episode. You can always find my sources listed underneath my show notes. If you've seen Larry Clark's earlier film, Kids, you'll recognize his style for the movie Bully. The raw handheld camera shot. There is a fantastic scene in which these characters are all teenagers and they're standing around discussing how they're going to murder their friend. And the way the camera moves, it's brilliant filmmaking. I know I've said that already, but you feel like you're actually in that scene. You feel like what it must feel like to be standing around in a group discussing how you're going to kill someone that you barely even know while you're high off your ass on every possible drug out there. The way Larry Clark directs is just, it's amazing. And so there are these long, uncomfortable scenes. Nothing in it is glamorized. I mean, there's a lot of nudity in this film, but everything feels really, I don't know, dirty. And he's able to show these teenagers as these aimless, unsupervised, out of control teens. And the Florida setting, you can feel the sweaty, chaotic mess in the atmosphere. Everyone's always dripping of sweat. And this film features these extremely strong performances from these young actors. At the time, we have Brad Renfro as Marty Puccio. We have Nick Stahl as Bobby Kent, Bijou Phillips, Ali Willis, and Rachel Miner as Lisa Connolly, and then Michael Pitt as Donnie. I will warn you before you watch this film that the murder sequence is long and uncomfortable, and it was a really upsetting scene to watch. It just, you can feel the pain and the panic in that scene. And on that note, I must talk about this before we get into the story. So this is sort of the controversy that really made it hard for me to research this episode, because Bobby Kent isn't here to defend himself. And that's one of the biggest problems with both this case and the movie and the book. Bobby Kent was murdered, and he never got the chance to tell his side of the story. The story is coming from these seven individuals who all say bad things about him, who all say that killing him was justified. But I have to remind you that three of the people involved in Bobby Kent's murder didn't even know him, never spoke to him. So you have to remember that Bobby Kent's entire reputation comes almost entirely from these teenagers that killed him. And the narrative of Bobby after his death became that he was a bully. So how much of Bobby's reputation is truth, and how much is justification for what they did? I just want you to keep that in mind as you listen to the story of Bobby Kent. July 13th, 1993, a phone call comes in to the Kent home at around midnight, and Fred Kent, the patriarch of the family, he rushes to grab the phone because he's really nervous. His son, Bobby, went out for the night with some of his friends, and Bobby still hasn't come home. So Fred rushes to the phone, and before he can get it, the answering machine picks up, and there's a message left by Bobby's best friend, Marty Puccio. And Marty says, "I called you. You asked me to call you when I got home." And then he hangs up. 19-year-old Marty Puccio left this message, and he was Bobby Kent's best friend. But Bobby's father, Fred, did not like Marty, and Marty sounded really suspicious on this phone call. Fred Kent tries to pick up the phone quick to talk to Marty, ask him, "Hey, have you seen Bobby? Why isn't he home yet?" But Marty hangs up too soon. But Fred thinks this is really suspicious, okay? Marty has never called and left a message like that. Usually Marty and Bobby are just connected at the hip. These two are inseparable. So Fred Kent gets up, he goes to Marty's house, bangs on the door, and he's greeted by not only Marty, but Marty's girlfriend, Lisa Connolly. Now, Fred Kent never met Lisa Connolly, 18-year-old Lisa. He has no idea who she is. He just wants to know if Marty has seen his son. And Marty's saying, "No, I haven't seen Bobby. I'm sorry." And at this point, you know, Fred is getting really anxious. He's like, "Come on, Marty, tell me anything you can tell me." And this 18-year-old Lisa, the girlfriend, steps forward and says, "Come on, we don't know where your son is. You need to go now." Of course, that's not going to fly with a parent. Bobby's father leaves that house even more suspicious of Marty than he was to begin with. He goes straight home, he calls the police, and files a missing persons report on his 20-year-old son, Bobby Kent. Bobby Kent was a motivated, popular community college student, and he worked part-time at a grocery store with his best friend, Marty Puccio. Bobby had aspirations to start his own car stereo business. Bobby's parents, Fred and Farah Kent, were Iranian immigrants, and their last name was originally Khayyam. They came to America and changed their last name to Kent, and they came here in search of economic opportunity. Bobby also had an older sister named Layla, and according to the book Bully, A True Story of High School Revenge, the Kent children were exuberant and buoyant. And as an example, Bobby was voted king of his class in a mock election. Kids just looked up to Bobby, and Marty Puccio was drawn to him. Marty and Bobby grew up close to each other in a suburb of Hollywood, Florida. Marty Puccio's parents, Veronica and Martin Puccio Sr., believed that they were doing the very best for their children when they moved them to Hollywood, Florida. Martin was a salesman for a production company, a film production company, and Veronica was a part-time receptionist at a doctor's office. They had three children, Marty and his two younger brothers, and the Puccios were church-going. They even brought the kids to choir. They loved to garden. They were your typical suburban family. It is noted in the book Bully that the Puccios had really no idea that the Kents did not like their son Marty. Fred Kent did not ever want Marty to be his son Bobby's best friend. He thought Bobby could do way better, that Marty was sort of a slacker, a loser. He had no aspirations. I mean, because Bobby was this really educated, smart kid who had goals of owning his own business. And Marty dropped out of high school in 11th grade, and he liked to spend his days surfing. I mean, Marty was actually a pretty good surfer, and his father often bragged about how great his son was at surfing. But Fred Kent, Bobby's father, would look at it like, this kid just goes around doing nothing all day but surfing. He lives his life like, wee, I got no responsibilities. Marty's parents actually started to notice his wild side. He seemed sullen. He seemed depressed. And he was getting in trouble a lot at school before he dropped out. A lot of the times he got in trouble, though, it was because of Bobby. I mean, the two of them were both doing the same bad things. For instance, and this one really just pisses me off. It's really hard to read about. It was really hard to watch. But Bobby and Marty thought it was really fun to pick on the kids at school who were in the special education classes, any kid that was autistic. They would joke around with them. They called it joking, but they were bullying them in a really horrific way. They would pretend like they wanted to be their friend, and they would say, hey, do you want to play football? And they would take a football and just like whip it at them, shoot it at them, push them, hurt them, bully them until, you know, these kids didn't know. They thought that they were trying to be their friend. And when teachers found out about this, or when teachers would see this, administration would see this happening, they kicked Bobby and Marty out of school, suspended them for certain times. And at this point, Bobby's family is just getting really upset at Marty, but Marty's family starts to go to a tough love parental group program because they notice, okay, we have to help our son. We have to figure out what is going on. So Bobby and Marty are bullying others. They're not only bullying the kids in the special needs classes, but they're also bullying a gay man at the gym. Now, Bobby and Marty start weightlifting. And they get into steroids pretty deep. And they want these big muscles. They want to be these big, tough dudes. They were often getting into physical and verbal confrontations with people that were at the gym. So they meet this guy at the gym. He is a gay man. And he was pretty attracted to Bobby and Marty. And he was trying to be their friend. He was just trying to hang out with them. Now, these two take advantage of him. And they tell him that they want to start this pornographic movie business. And he can help if he would just, you know, dance naked, perform some sexual acts in front of the camera. And then Marty and Bobby would take the videos and they would try to sell them to local video stores. So this guy did this. They tried to sell the tapes, but nobody wanted them. These were really low quality, low budget pornos that these two teenagers, well, they're 19 and 20, were making. This man that they met from the gym, he makes one tape with them. It doesn't go anywhere. They ask him to do another one, and he doesn't want to. He's like, listen, I don't want to be involved in this anymore. And Bobby and Marty beat the shit out of this man. And not only do these two start to make gay pornographic movies, but they also start going to gay dance clubs. And at these clubs on certain nights, Bobby would pressure Marty to get up on stage and dance, because some of these clubs would have these nights where mostly the younger guys in the crowd would get up on stage, a large amount of them, and they would take off their clothes and they would dance for all of the other men in the audience, and these men would give them money. So it was like an amateur strip club night, and Bobby forced Marty to do this. Marty was often pressured to do things by Bobby, and Bobby would physically harm Marty. He would often come home with black eyes, with bruises all over his body, and he would ask his parents if they could move. I don't know if he really let his parents know exactly what was going on. He was so distant, but he would just beg, please, please, can we just move away from here? And like I said, Bobby and Marty are attached at the hip. They even work the same part-time job. They work together at Publix in the deli. They make sandwiches. And that is where they met 18-year-old Lisa Conley and 19-year-old Allie Willis, two best friends. So let me tell you a little bit about Lisa. And I don't know how much of this is true, because in the movie, you will see in one of the opening scenes, Lisa's naked on her bed, just looking up at her bedroom wall filled with all of these posters and pictures of half-naked men. And I remember thinking, who lays in their bedroom naked like that? But, I mean, because this is how Lisa's always laying in her bedroom in every single scene of this movie. I mean, she'll often just walk around the house completely naked. But in the book, Bully, they describe Lisa's room. And it makes me wonder, did Lisa tell you this stuff, or did you just make this up? Because I've rarely known a woman who uses the words hunk and stud, even in the 90s. So let me read to you. The wall above Lisa's bed was a shrine to yearning. Pictures of fantastic studs in G-strings with their chest and haunches. greased and flexed, languished next to glossy photographs of gorgeous wet-lipped women in everything from fashion magazine poses to soft porn stretches. These Olympian men and women steamed up the wall above her bed in a crazy jumble, and above them, she had taped a headline cut from a newspaper that said, "What Women Want." And Lisa is described as a girl who only wants a boy. Her whole life is revolving around the fact that all she wants is a boyfriend. But she thinks she's, quote, fat and ugly. Now, that's why I'm saying, do you think that if she thought she was fat and ugly, she's laying around naked all day in her house? And that's the other thing that pisses me off. Lisa is often referred to as overweight, fat, chunky. Lisa's best friend was Allie Willis. She was 19 years old. She was a high school dropout and a former teen prostitute that worked for an escort service. And it is said that this escort service catered to men who liked girls who looked really young. So these two teenage girls walk into the Publix and they see Marty and Bobby. They think they are so hot, you know, total hunks, and they decide to all hang out later that night. Honestly, maybe we should start saying hunks more often. Now, Lisa has built up this romantic version of what a first date is supposed to be, and her friend Allie, she's very experienced. As I said, she worked for an escort service. Lisa, she's a virgin. She hasn't had a boyfriend. She doesn't know what it's like to have a boyfriend, but she wants a boyfriend, and she wants Marty to be her boyfriend immediately. So the four of them are hanging out at the beach and they decide, let's go to this party. That party that Bobby told everyone he was taking them to was actually just the parking lot where they were all going to start having sex in that car. And the minute that Marty and Lisa became one, Lisa was obsessed with Marty. From that point on, that was her man, and she was not letting him go. So Marty and Lisa become boyfriend and girlfriend, and Bobby and Allie date for a little bit, but it comes to a point where Allie's just not feeling Marty. She doesn't like him. He is really mean to her, and she tells her friends that he raped her. And Ellie can't understand why Lisa is still hanging out with Marty and Bobby, but Lisa is so obsessed with Marty at this point. Lisa confides that Bobby actually also raped her, and Marty didn't do anything about it. And Lisa starts to see how Bobby is controlling. From Lisa's eyes, she's seeing that Bobby controls every single move that Marty makes. Marty has no say in anything. And you know what Bobby doesn't want? He doesn't want Lisa dating his friend Marty anymore. He starts to abuse Lisa physically, verbally. Marty's doing jack shit about it. He's calling Lisa Shamu the whale because, again, we've got to say, you know, Lisa's, quote, fat and ugly. And Lisa's getting fed up with it. And she also sees the way that Marty just looks like a defeated man. And Lisa starts to think, you know what? We've got to end this relationship that you have with your supposed best friend. But Marty's not going for it. Marty doesn't want to end his relationship with Bobby. But Lisa keeps getting into his head. And she keeps manipulating him and telling him, we're going to end this and we're going to end this soon. Because Lisa is really jealous of the time that Bobby and Marty spend together. Marty starts confiding in Lisa that he's over it. He's sick of it. He can't stand the way Bobby treats him. As he gets closer and closer to Lisa, he's able to tell her, yeah, you're right. I don't want to be around him. Around this time, Lisa finds out that she is pregnant. And she tells Marty, and he loses his shit. He freaks out. He's like, we're not having a baby. He's losing his mind. But Lisa also has said that Bobby raped her. And at this point, she doesn't know whose baby it is. Is this Marty's baby or is this Bobby's baby? And it is at this point that Lisa decides Bobby Kent needs to be eliminated. Lisa starts throwing this idea out. We should get rid of Bobby. She's telling Allie. She's telling Marty. Of course, Allie's down. She says Bobby raped her. She's down. She'll do whatever she needs to do. And at this point, Allie has a new boyfriend already. His name is Donnie Semenek. And Donnie says, hell yeah, I want to help. I want to get him back for what he did to you, Allie. So now Donnie's in on it. And Lisa comes up with the plan. She says, this is what we're going to do. We're going to ask Bobby to hang out. It's just going to be me and Allie. And we're going to take Bobby to a secluded place. And Allie's going to have sex with him. And while she does that, I'm going to walk up behind him with my mother's gun that I stole from my mom. And I'll shoot Bobby. They carry this plan out almost. They get all the way to the secluded spot. Lisa gets too scared. She says, you know what? I don't know how I'm actually going to shoot Bobby without shooting Allie. So this is your example of how well these teenagers are putting this plan together. They're not thinking it through. This plan fails. So Lisa gathers her crew together. She's got Marty, her boyfriend. She's got Allie, her best friend, Allie's boyfriend, Donnie Semenek. And then Allie also has a friend named Heather Swallers. This girl is 18. She had just recently left rehab and went straight to hanging out with this crew. We also have 19-year-old Derek DeVirco, who is Lisa's cousin. So you have to remember in this situation, these teenagers are high as fuck. I'm telling you, drunk, high. They're sitting around Lisa's bedroom where she lives with her mom, who's a single mom, and they're discussing how they're going to kill their friend. But the fucking weirdest part to me is that Donnie, Heather, they don't know Bobby at all. They never met Bobby. They don't know who this guy is. And they're just sitting there high off their ass, laughing along with this murder plot. This time they try to murder Bobby, Lisa's got a new idea. They need help. They're going to need to contact a hitman. And this is a guy, 20-year-old Derek Kaufman. He was recommended by a friend of Ellie. So they think they're going to go get this hitman, a self-proclaimed hitman, to help them. But what they don't know about this hitman is that Derek Kaufman is a 20-year-old, unemployed, high school dropout, severely insecure. He still lives with his parents, and he hangs out with all of these little kids in his neighborhood because it makes him feel superior. He tells Lisa that he's a part of a mafia, but he's not. On July 14th, 1993, Marty calls his best friend Bobby and asks him if he wants to hang out. And he says, you know, Allie will be there. So Bobby agrees. The group, we have Lisa, Marty, Heather, Allie, Derek, and Donnie all decide we'll go in two separate cars. So they drive over to Bobby's house. They pick him up. Bobby is like, who the hell are all these people? Marty's like, don't worry about it, dude. Let's go. Bobby gets in the car, not knowing that these teenagers, between them, they had two knives, a lead pipe, and a baseball bat, and no plan on how they were going to murder him. If at this point you are wondering, why didn't somebody say stop? Why didn't somebody say, what are we doing? Well, first of all, everyone's high off their ass. Second of all, there is an interview done with Derek DeVerco. He was Lisa's cousin. This is on Forensic Files. They did an interview with him. He said that as he sat in that bedroom and they all discussed what they were going to do, he didn't believe it was true. That's what we always hear in all of these cases involving teenagers. I didn't believe that they were serious. I mean, they tried to do it the night before. They brought a gun. I had to think they were a little bit serious, but I don't know. I wasn't there. And he says that he thought, okay, maybe they'll just kind of punch him. They'll beat him up a little bit. I didn't think they were going to go this far. They chose a remote area on the edge of the Everglades. They drove there. They parked their cars. They all got out of the car and they still don't have any idea what they're going to do. Allie would lead Bobby to the edge of the water to have sex. So this plan is being made as Bobby's standing there with them and they're all whispering to each other. Allie, you pretend like you're going to go have sex with Bobby. Heather will walk up behind you. And when Heather says, hey, are there any alligators out here? That will be our cue to run out there and just start attacking Bobby. So that's what they do. Heather says the alligator's line, and Donnie, out of nowhere, just runs up, comes running up from behind, and just throws the first blow, a stab wound right to the back of the neck of Bobby Kent, a man that Donnie has never met in his life until this night. Immediately, Bobby is begging for Marty. Marty, where are you? Marty, help me. Marty, what is going on? And Marty walks straight up to his best friend and he just shoves a knife into his stomach. And Bobby is, he doesn't know what's going on. He's looking around, surrounded by these people. Some of them he doesn't even know. And he's just begging Marty to help him. Marty, you're my best friend. Marty, will you please stop and will you please help me? Bobby falls to the ground and his best friend Marty sits on top of him, straddles his body and slits his throat. And then Derek Kaufman hits Bobby over the head with a baseball bat and that was the final blow. Then Derek Kaufman, this self-proclaimed hitman, looks at everyone while they're all frantic and he says, if you say anything, if any one of you says anything, I will kill every one of you. And then he makes everyone help him take Bobby's body down to the edge of the water because they believe that if they leave it down there, that alligators will eat it and they'll be home free. Nobody will ever know what happened to Bobby Kent. And that is when Marty goes home, leaves his dumb voicemail, but a voicemail, luckily, that Fred Kent was able to determine was really suspicious. I don't know how these people thought that no one would tell. There are seven people that are drunk, that are high, that are scared, that are teenagers. Somebody's going to talk, and somebody does talk, and that's Lisa's cousin, Derek DeVerco. He tells the police every single person's name, and every single person is brought in. Bobby's body is found with a 1-inch stab wound to the back of the neck, a 3-inch wound to his abdomen that was so deep that it almost reached his back, a stab wound to the heart that was the fatal wound. It hit his lung and a 2-inch laceration on his head by a baseball bat and 2 wounds 4 inches long and 5 inches long on Bobby's neck. All 7 teenagers are arrested for first-degree murder. And every single one of them said, "Not me. I wasn't involved. I was just an innocent bystander. Wasn't me." 20 months after the murder of Bobby Kent, each person involved says not guilty on trial. And there were 7 separate trials held. Was Bobby Kent a bully? Or was this just their defense? Lisa claimed that she was innocent, but everybody knew Lisa Conley was the mastermind behind the murder of Bobby Kent. Heather Swallers, sentenced to 7 years in prison, served less than 3, was released in February 1998. Derek DeVerco, sentenced to 6 years in prison, he is now free. Allie Willis, sentenced to 40 years in prison, later reduced to 17. She served less than 7 and was released in September 2001. Donnie Semenek met Bobby Kent for the first time that night, life in prison. Derek Kaufman, the self-proclaimed hitman, life in prison. Lisa Connolly, the mastermind behind the murder of Bobby Kent, the girlfriend of Bobby Kent's best friend, life in prison. Lisa's sentence was overturned. She was given 22 years. And after serving less than 9 years, Lisa Connolly was released in February 2004. Marty Puccio, Bobby Kent's best friend, death by electrocution. In 1997, Marty Puccio was resentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 25 years. Lisa Conley was pregnant at trial, and while in prison, she gave birth to a baby girl. And she still talks to Marty Puccio to this day. According to a ForensicFilesNow.com article, Lisa is living in Pennsylvania with a daughter from her relationship with Marty Puccio and a younger son. This is according to the Sun Sentinel. Lisa had a lot of trouble gaining employment, so she turned to self-employment, becoming a certified optician and running a cleaning business. She kept a low profile since her release. And during an interview with Forensic Files, her cousin, Derek DeVerco, mentioned that he knows Lisa's daughter with Marty Puccio. He hangs out with her. He calls her his niece. And he says she is really smart. So maybe she'll do a better job of picking friends than her mother did. Stay safe and stay paranoid.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.